He justified this to his cautious employers by sales. The original dust jacket of The Sun Also Rises shows a partially clad but classic-looking Greek lady with an apple by Cleonike Damianakis, which Perkins explained as Cleon's respectably sexy design to attract the feminine readers who control the destiny of so many novels. The Sun Also Rises had incredible sexual influence. Women modelled themselves on the main female character, Lady Brett Ashley, a beautiful, twice-divorced, sexually adventurous young flapper with bobbed hair and a wistful affection for the male narrator, Jake, who is sexually impotent due to a war injury. It is definitely at the bottom of the iceberg whether they remain together at the end of the book. In the meantime, Brett has other relationships causing friction between the male characters and including an idealized young matador, Ramiro, who finally separates from her apparently because he wants a more feminine woman with longer hair. Ramiro is also of interest to us because he was named after a famous 18th century bullfighter whose technique involved standing still and allowing the bull to die by impaling itself on his sword, a technique called recibiendo, receiving. He killed thousands of bulls, and Hemingway deliberately and reverentially changed his own matador's killing method to recibiendo. There is a feminist argument here, perhaps, that in fact Jake is the impassive and passive matador, and that Brett is destroyed by approaching him. "Oh, Jake," Brett said, "we could have had such a damned good time together." Ahead was a mounted policeman in his khaki directing traffic. He raised his baton. The car slowed suddenly, pressing Brett against me. "Yes," I said, "isn't it pretty to think so?" But there are other implications, not least that there are likely to be fluxing gender switches in most powerful art. Hemingway's enthusiasm for bullfighting was rationalized by him as the excitement of watching a profound life and death spectacle without being involved. But sexual excitement is involvement. Hemingway was a very well-publicized recreational hunter who finally suicided by sitting down quietly and shooting himself with his favourite double-barreled hunting shotgun. Just as the wish and the fear can be interchangeable, so are the active and the passive in the vertical sexual hierarchy. Perhaps he was simultaneously frustrating, avoiding and placating the authorities he feared, recibiendo. Despite his enormous attitudinizing about action, however, it is the peculiar addicted passivity of the receptive author we see most in his life. Despite the acceptance, indeed often the approving excitement, amongst readers who find that authors have a tendency to practice candid espionage, from the prolific female playwright Aphra Behn in the 18th century to Ian Fleming and a host of others with an intelligence persona in the 1950s and 1960s, there always seems some element of shock when an unlikely suspect is identified and confirmed. When the ostensibly left-wing British journalist Paul Mason was revealed recently to have been in covert correspondence with British intelligence agents to deplatform and discredit influential dissenting voices and to have drawn a huge hierarchical map of what he considered potential tools of the enemy, the staunch and eloquent socialist George Galloway was among the strongest to denounce him. In doing so, Galloway referred angrily to the earlier example of George Orwell, who had been revealed decades ago to have made secret lists for the British Foreign Office of people he considered left-wing risks in the literary and artistic community, ratting on them even as he ostensibly befriended them. The issue of Orwell is very complex, and we should examine it here mainly through the lens topic of this essay, which is sexuality. Orwell's notorious list was compiled in different versions over time from a notebook he had begun keeping in the mid-1940s. It was finally given to Celia Kerwin of the Information Research Department. The IRD was a covert propaganda department of the Foreign Office, designed to promote anti-communist and pro-colonial propaganda, to support, create and inform anti-communist politicians, academics and writers, and to weaponize lies. It had close ties to Oxford University, the CIA and their Congress for Cultural Freedom, including the periodical Encounter and Reuters News Service. Celia Kerwin was a slim, intelligent-eyed, dark-haired young woman who had worked for Horizon magazine before being supervised by Robert Conquest at the IRD. Her sister was married to Orwell's friend, the writer Arthur Koestler, who encouraged Celia to accept a marriage proposal from Orwell. She didn't, but she did accept his list. She was one of at least four women he courted after the death of his first wife, Eileen. Orwell's erotic life was, of course, full of spectacular contradictions. His frequent expression of dislike for pansy homosexuals was contradicted by his predilection as a schoolmaster for beating his little boy pupils violently on the buttocks, and his contempt for the sex maniacs of left-wing ideology was contradicted by his own numerous sexual encounters, including with the secretary for an Iron Bevan's Tribune, of which Orwell was literary editor, when he was married to the despondent and courageous Eileen. There is a parallel between the contradictions in Orwell and his rejection of colonialism, but attraction to colonial figures and occupations. His father, Richard Blair, after whom he named his adopted son, had been a sub-deputy opium agent in the colonial Indian Civil Service, overseeing opium production and storage for sale to China, after the defeat of China by Britain in the Opium Wars. Orwell was accustomed to flirting with, as well as criticising, such ideologies, in which profit and power are imposed in the name of freedom. My thesis here would be that Orwell attempted to reconcile his extreme political contradictions through his choice of sexual and marital goals, such goals as Celia Kerwin. The colonial conservative part of his nature demanded expression compulsively, and since he was also genuinely socialist, the courted women's function was to provide an outlet and a mask which allowed him to maintain the dichotomy. The strength of his sexuality was powered by the strength of the contradiction. The notebook he kept in private denouncing left-wing figures has all the intensity and habit of a sexual secret, and as such was certain to find a release. Significantly, his second marriage, which he formalised months before his death, was with the sensuous Sonia Brownell, who had also worked as the power behind Horizon and as a commissioning force for the publisher Whitenfeld and Nicholson. After Orwell's death, she combined with Orwell's former publisher, Frederick Warburg, and ensured that the Information Research Department gained foreign rights to most of Orwell's writings. It translated his work into 20 languages, distributed Animal Farm worldwide, and financed and created the animated film of it with the CIA. It is typical of this type of institution's thinking that they also believed that pigs being denigrated in that story would influence Arab nationalism away from the Soviets. But despite what might seem comedy, we shouldn't underestimate Orwell's deliberation in choosing Sonia to oversee the future of his work. After a conservative Roman Catholic upbringing and detailed and diligent transcribing of the late medieval Mort d'Arthur at Oxford, Sonia Brownell had usurped the power at the avant-garde Horizon from Orwell's boyhood friend Cyril Connolly, who was reportedly too lazy to care, and become sexually adventurous and editorially experimental in a way that was in keeping with conservative political forces. Orwell would have recognised her trajectory. Despite many biographies to the contrary, there was nothing accidental or casual about their marriage, nor was it just to provide a parent for Richard, who was anyway destined to be brought up gratefully by Orwell's younger sister. If it is true that Orwell based the optimistic, naive and energetic character Julia in 1984 on Sonia, it is again evidence that he wished to provide a contradictory, authorised version to anything that might be suspected. No doubt both guises were valid for him.